Hello, Knicks fans. Welcome to another episode of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. Sadly, all good things come to an end, and such has happened to the Knicks season. The Knicks, were shown the door by the Miami Heat in six games. We'll talk a little bit about that series in a second, but got a full crew tonight. Omar here alongside Alex and Rafa. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good, thanks, Omar. I think I said to you, can I come to terms with going out maybe before game six? I'd kind of made my peace with it all. I was still, during the game, I was still really up for it and, obviously a bit angry the way they finished and things, but I think, I've not even listened to any kind of post-game pods from other places. I could honestly probably recite pretty much every word of what they were going to say. So, I just switched everything off, went and listened to some other podcasts, and then a couple of days later, here we are, kind of ready to talk, kind of sensibly about things and go through things of what the summer will bring. So, yeah, that's the idea. We'll see once Rafa's rant starts.
What? Sorry. I'm good. Let's just go. I'm ready. Let's dive in.
Let's go, man. Like Alex alluded to, the Knicks go out in six against the Miami Heat. So I think when we last spoke, series was 2-1, if I'm not mistaken. And so since then, there's game four, which was just, a big time, gut punch for the Knicks. And, they're down 3-1, came out in game five, took care of business at home, didn't get, their season ended at MSG, which was something that I know we were definitely looking forward to. Then they went into Miami for game six and, you had an amazing game from Jalen Brunson, 41 points. But no one else really showed up with him. RJ had a rough game. I think it was 1-for-11 that game. Julius 3-for-14, and he didn't get much from Grimes or Hart. Had a couple threes from Obi, which was encouraging. But it was really Jalen Brunson versus the Miami Heat. And Miami made enough shots that, it wasn't going to end well. But so the Knicks go out in six. I guess let's start with talking about the series as a whole. Alex, what do you really think stood out to you from this series when you're just looking at the series?
I think there was, first of all, I know none of us like the Miami Heat, although you keep kind of jibing me with my love of Jimmy and Kyle Lowry, but nobody likes the Heat. And saying that, I don't know if it kind of clouded a lot of people's judgment and that they saw that they were the 7/8 seed and, just thought that this was going to be something easier than it was. I mean, I kept saying to you guys in the run-up to the end of the season, I was like, the Heat are going to make a run for this. Like, see, when we were still trying to kind of cement that kind of fifth, sixth position, I was like, don't count out the Heat. That roster is just too experienced. There's too much talent on it. They've got a great coach. They're going to make a run at some point. And then the play-in happened and they looked absolutely god-awful, like dreadful. And I thought, well, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe I was going to be wrong. And then that Bucks series, they just turned everything around. They lost Hero as well, which everybody thought that was the kind of nail in the coffin for the season, but they just turned everything around. And I see, some of these guys, like champion players, like Love and Lowry, there's no huge surprise that they're making an impact at this kind of level. They've got the experience, they've got the kind of calmness under pressure that, maybe some of these other teams don't have. I was surprised about the Bucks series as a whole. I know Giannis was injured, but huge respect to the Heat for pulling that one out. And I think, even though I think we disrespected the Heat a little bit, they are, a good matchup for us. Very similar kind of styles of team, kind of grinding it out teams. But I think just the Heat in general, just that little bit better in quite a few areas and a bit more consistent with their shooting and things like that. And got more out of their role players, got more out of their bench, which a lot of people would said would be our strength. So, I think we just came as far as we could. And although I've not been listening to pods, I have been looking at Twitter, and I just see a lot of people just saying, you know, we should have done this, we should have done that. But you're like, well, you know, I think given the expectations of at the start of the season and even before the start of the playoffs, I think, you know, the team's done really well. And I think there's so much to look forward to in the future that, you know, we should really at this point be focusing on the positive side of it. So, I think they were just a bit better than us. No complaints about the result as a whole.
Yeah, it's. I think the main takeaway. You Alex mentioned it. It's the bench play. We basically had no bench play other than a few OB highlights. Other than that, we had no presence there. The game we won, we played Brunson in 48 minutes and Grimes 48 minutes. In the last game, the minutes that Brunson didn't play with the second unit, they basically ruined the game for us, I feel like. We never recovered from that spell in the beginning of the second quarter there. And, depth all game long. I think even the game we won that we had going into the fourth, we had 2 bench points against Miami's 19, which is ridiculous. That's not how we are supposed to be. We always said before the series against the Cavs, before the series against the Heat, our depth, or the big 15, that our depth is the our main weapon, and we didn't have that weapon. Brunson was amazing. RJ stepped up. Mitch played better, much better against the Cavs than what he did against the Heat as well. Bam gave him a lot more trouble. They fought it out more because Bam wasn't amazing as well, but he was. They kind of nullified each other, and they got to the line a lot, got us into foul trouble a lot, many players. The fouls, I think, got Josh Hart off rhythm as well, because the last games he was more complaining to the referees and what he was playing, so it got to them. But they were, I mean, like I mentioned to many people on Twitter, like, we beat the Cavs, we're going to beat the Heat easily. How can you say that about a team that's motivated from beating the number one seed, the Bucks, the fashion they did? How can you say that just the Knicks in 5 against the Miami Heat that beat the in 5, the Bucks? Oh, we beat the Cavs. Yes, but the Cavs weren't the team to beat in the East. The Bucks were. So, to me, they were, basically. And so, yeah, I always thought this was going to be a war. And it was. We had several battles. And only 2 of those battles we won. And last game, game 6, especially when that flagrant foul came up, I said, okay, this is the moment we get it to game 7, but no, the turnover, the heartbreaking turnover from Brunson as well was ridiculous. It was ridiculous in terms of how ball breaking it was. Like, Brunson failed it. Nobody will say anything about Jalen Brunson for turning it over. It happens. It's a learning experience.
People have already said things, Rafa. Let's make that clear.
Let's ignore them. Let's ignore those people. Let's ignore them. Yeah. It's ridiculous to blame the loss on a guy who had 41 points or 40 whatever points he had. It's ridiculous to do that. It's ridiculous to blame one player in a series loss in 6 games. Let's blame one player, the player that fits your narrative to blame. Future still looks bright. Young kids, a bunch of young kids playing second round basketball, developing, playing better, rising to the occasion, in most of the moments they were in the playoffs. And Jalen Brunson cementing himself as a star to me. a number one option. You can have a number one option or one and two and a half, one and a half, something like that. And yeah, it's, we are in the second round and we made no big moves other than giving up a second round pick to Jalen Brunson. So I'm looking forward to the future.
Let me jump in real quick here, Rafa. You kind of alluded to it. To me, there is no kind of 1A, 1B. He cemented himself as a number one option in Jalen Brunson. Like, you get into a second round against a team, you know, and like you said, Alex, we discounted so much of what Miami was because we're looking like, oh, look at these undrafted free agents they got. Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Haywood Highsmith. You know, I was on the Knicks Fan Wilding podcast. I still don't think Mario knows what that guy's name is in Haywood Highsmith. So, you know, that's a team that has championship pedigree, okay? Like, they're in the conference finals now, third time in the last 4 years, you know, and you might not think about that, but they've been on a little bit of a run here really ever since the bubble. And, you know, a lot of people are going to, you know, always talk, say whatever they want to say about the bubble and the COVID year after that. But the facts are the facts, and they have championship pedigree. Kevin Love has won championships. Kyle Lowry has won a championship. Jimmy Butler has been in high-leverage playoff games and the NBA Finals before. Bam Adebayo has been in the NBA Finals before. These are players who have experience, you know, and these are players that we, as Knicks fans, I think, took lightly. We took lightly the fact that Eric Spoelstra is probably the best coach in the NBA. And that really is what stood out to me. You know, Spoelstra was kind of just coaching his ass off this series. And I'm not saying, I'm not going to say he outcoached Tibbs, but he made a lot of adjustments on the fly. He did a lot of things and some things worked, like their implementation of the zone. Some things didn't work, like when he tried Hakimich and you know, Mitch made him pay from the line there, hitting three out of four. And I guess to me, that's, those are two things that stand out, that we really got a great player on a unbelievably value contract in Jalen Brunson because his deal is descending. So next year he's going to be like 45th highest player in the league, which is insane to think about. Right. And then we have a Miami team that was able to exploit our weaknesses. You know, they realized, hey, this team can't shoot outside of Brunson and dared us to shoot. And we missed a lot of jumpers. You know, you just look at the 3-point shooting numbers across the board, starters, bench, everybody, it was bad. You know, and, you know, Heat are, I got nothing but respect for that coaching staff right now, just because they got the better of us, you know, and we took them for granted because we thought, hey, they don't have Tyler Hero. This should be an easy win. Right. And we were feeling ourselves after, you know, after beating Cleveland in five games. And, you know, we were certainly in for a wake up call. But I do want to shift into this one thing here. So, Rafa, you mentioned the fact that we got to the second round. Should be proud of that, of course, without having to spend any or sacrifice any of our assets, really, outside of the second round pick that we gave up for Jalen Brunson, right, for the tampering charge. so I guess after the series, after this playoff run, how are you guys feeling about the team as a whole moving forward?
Sorry, Rafa, I thought you were going first.
I was going to say that it's I think we're in a great spot here. I said we're still in a great spot. We have I was mentioning how we are still have young guys developing and playing in these moments, playing in the playoffs. I always say that being there and playing is the best way to evolve. And that's what we, I think we saw. I was very surprised that with Obi, he was able to maintain his style of play and his level of play, for example. Grimes' intensity defense was there. His shooting was continuing the trend he had a bit. He had this year was a bit shaky. RJ, nobody was expecting this from RJ Barrett, and he delivered in these playoffs. Hope he can continue to deliver throughout the rest of his career. And I mean, quickly had a rough series, but 2 years ago he was pretty impactful out there. So. A rough spell for him. I believe he's a guy who can bounce back next year. Look at me, next year in the playoffs. And it's all developing. Everything is coming up. And all the guys that talked about this year that we overpaid. We had overpaid RJ Barrett. He showed up in the playoffs. We had overpaid Mitchell Robinson. He showed up in the playoffs. We overpaid Jalen Brunson. Look at what he did in the playoffs in a descending contract, like you were saying. It's crazy to have that. It's I mean, I think we're in a great spot. There's guys, the guys who have the majority of our cap are leaving, in Evan Fournier and Derrick Rose as well. So that's almost 40 million gone, which is a monstrosity to have on the bench. But yeah, it's maybe we sign Josh Hart back. I think he wants to come back and not a demand 25 or 30 million. So we can add pieces to what we need with it, which is shooting. We knew we needed shooting, and Eric Spoelstra did too. And we had no shooting. We had nothing to offer that. We had Gaines shooting 3 for 20, which is how can you win in the playoffs in the second round shooting that? I think it's still positive. Nobody expected us to be in the second round. Nobody, no matter what everyone says, nobody expected us to be in a second round. People were expecting us to lose against Cleveland, Omar. So yeah, we did better, and we are developing. And again, we didn't make a big move. We didn't trade 3 first-round picks or 4 first-round picks for Donovan Mitchell or DeJounte Murray or Rudy Gobert. So I'm happy we're still a move away, because we still have the assets to move what we want to move. So I'm happy, despite losing the second round.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a really big fan of Grimes. I've been really impressed, actually. Like, I know his shooting's really up and down, but just the way that he's taken on the role of a starter, he looks really confident. Remember early in that Cavs series where he's like knocking down those two clutch free throws, things like that, and the moment doesn't seem to faze him. And I think, you know, the consistency of his shot is going to come. His shot's, you know, technically spot on. You know, there's absolutely no reason that just with more repetition and more experience, you know, that shot, that kind of consistency and his percentages are not going to go up and up. So, and just the fact that he just seems to be an all-round kind of, you know, guy. He's obviously great defensively as a one-on-one defender. And I just love his confidence. He love his demeanor. He just seems like a super positive guy. So, I'd really like, hopefully, if he's still there after the summer, that, you know, his role is gonna get bigger and bigger. You know, he's already cemented his starting spot, and unless they make a big move, then hopefully the minutes will go up. Rafa, you mentioned about his shot attempts. I think he's just going to expand his game, expand his role, and hopefully just get better and better. So I think he could be really important.
Just shoot the ball. Just shoot it. You're open, shoot. If you're open and you believe you can hit it, just shoot. I mean, if you're not Mitchell Robinson trying to hit a three for fun, yeah, I'm good.
The only thing with his shot is the whole quick release thing, I find that, you know, in lots of situations that can be an advantage, obviously, to get a quick shot off and not be, you know, have the defender right up on you. But sometimes he does just go for the quick shot no matter what position he's in. Like, even if he's wide open, he seems to rush it a little bit. So, that's something that comes with experience. You know, the kind of coaching staff just need to kind of drum that into him that, you know, if he has time, he can take his time. So, but yeah, sometimes he just grabs it and just goes straight up, even without a defender anywhere near him. That's just something that he's got to improve. So, but yeah,
you know, I'm looking at this season, and this team has exceeded any expectations that any of us had, that most of any fans had. You know, to the fact that, you know, you really got to take a step back and think. We've won a playoff series for the first time in 10 years. You know, we took a team that is now, you know, could potentially be in the NBA finals. We'll see how their series goes against Boston. six games, and you know, we fought hard, showed everything that we needed to show. We thought we were getting a good point guard in Brunson at the beginning of the year. It turns out we got a great point guard in Brunson. And when you look at this playoffs, like, it was incredibly imperfect. You know, like, you like we talked earlier about RJ, you had a few bad RJ games, you had a lot of bad Randall games, a lot of bad IQ games, terrible shooting, you know, and yet you still come out feeling good about it because the team has played, has defended well, and they have, you know, missed shots but made some shots when it counted, and you won a playoff series against, I think it can't go unnoticed, against the guy that everybody was killing you for not trading for, and you sent him home in five games, you know, and it's not like he doesn't have anybody around him. You know, like, we obviously talked about their lack of bench, but, you know, he still has that starting unit, still has guys that that are respected around the league, and Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, even LeVert is somewhat respected as a decent pro around the league. So, you know, nothing to hang your hat on. This is a team, we've said a million times, it's supposed to be a play-in team, you know, but they secured a playoff spot with the five seed, won a playoff series, and, you know, afforded themselves well against a Miami team that just hit more shots and was overall just better than us this time around. So there's, you know, really nothing to hang your head on about this playoff run, I feel like. And some Knicks fans are taking this thing of, well, you know, the circumstances changed when Miami beat Milwaukee. That was a winnable series, whereas Milwaukee would have been not so winnable trying to defend Giannis. But I'm just like, you can't just move the goalposts like that, right? Like, you have to understand what your expectations were. The season is a resounding success. As a result, this playoff run is a resounding success because you put the league on notice with Jalen Brunson, which is going to be huge with acquiring free agents down the road, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And it said, hey, you know, I'm not trying to say, oh, Knicks are back or whatever, but hey, we're a respectable team now. And you know, we've won the playoff series, which a lot of times you get teams who make the playoffs every year. Like, remember the Magic for a number of years, or make the playoffs only to get swept in the first round every single time. You know, that didn't happen with us, you know, and I think that's something to hang your hat on, especially with the fact that we don't have a true superstar, according to most people. Right. So So I think that's really my takeaway about the team as a whole, and the fact that, you know, if you got, I think, Rafa, you mentioned this, you got experience for these young guys. Mitch with his first playoff experience, Hartenstein with his first playoff experience, a meaningful playoff experience, quickly got his playoff minutes. Obi got his playoff minutes. You know, all these guys got Grimes, Hart.
Josh Hart.
Guys. Yeah.
Exactly. Josh Hart is the first time in the playoffs as well. So,
yeah. So you got these guys meaningful experience. And if you're going to keep these guys long term, which, again, we'll discuss about in a second here, you're looking at, you know, the foundations of something good, you know, and I think that can't go unnoticed just because you're disappointed that, you know, you couldn't get it done against Miami, you know, because you thought that was a winnable series. I mean, we all did. We all took for granted, you know, like, what playoff experience and resilience and all that means, you know, and that's bad by us, you know, but, you know, at the same time, that's, you know, I think a learning moment for this team moving forward, you know, and you build from this and you try to take the next level by making the right moves. So I guess that dovetails into this next thing. So I'm pretty sure this will be the shortest segment in our podcast history, but now that the season's over, do you guys consider this season a success?
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to touch on that, and that might kind of lead on into the next thing, that, you know, we're all kind of in agreement that, you know, we've kind of overachieved this year. But remember, we kind of overachieved 2 years ago as well. And it's all about what you do now and how you take that forward. Because I think, you know, how they reacted 2 summers ago, I think, you know, they kind of did the right thing in that they took the players that got them there and, you know, they kind of rewarded them with that. Yeah, they made mistakes. You know, they tried to change the system with Kemba and Fournier and, you know, it didn't work. But, you know, so I think this summer is going to be key, how they react. Do they just run it back? Do they make a big move? You know, do they just get rid of Randall for nothing? that kind of thing. So I think this summer is going to be so important just to kind of keep that momentum going into the new year.
If anyone else says that this season wasn't a success, they're lying to themselves. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I think I always believed we could be in the playoffs and we could squeak in the first out of the first round. To me, and we did it. So to me, it's a huge success because, again, we had been no major move. We just developed. We play the kids with Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle. We play the kids and we advanced and we got better as a team. So obviously the pressure for next year, they will want us to be a playoff team again. Mm-hmm. Obviously it will be a big fight to do that, but obviously it's a success. I understand people that, and you were picking up what you were saying, Omar, about the Heat being a more obtainable win in the series than the Bucks, mm-hmm. but it's still a success. But even yeah. if we're losing to the and we were the only team to lose in the second round, actually putting up a fight when they lost. Look at the Suns. Look at the Sixers. Everyone. They yeah. just the Sixers. Look at that. How can you? I mean, it's the last game, and I know it's a team sport, but Joel, come on. I mean, it's something else.
Harden.
It's
Harden.
Yeah. Well, Harden fooled us all. We were discussing 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Oh, Harden is back. No, he did. No, he
what
isn't.
What a weird series for him. You know, games one and game four, so magnificent. And then game six and seven just lays multiple eggs. You know, it's just, I guess,
classic. How many Harden, eggs? Right? Yeah, how many eggs did he lay in the playoffs?
I mean, yeah. through his career, many, you know, it's a weird thing because, like, they had a stat where he's like, I think he surpassed 30 point games in his playoff career, which is an incredible feat, you know. But then you think about all the missed opportunities, all the just the bad performances as well. Then you see how many playoff games he's played. It's kind of staggering. He's been in the playoffs a lot throughout his career, so just very, very interesting.
He has, but yeah, and look at the Suns with Devin Booker as well. Like a second game of. Second year, your back is against the wall, and you just lay there and die. It's well, he doesn't like Europeans anymore, basically. European superstars,
especially as Booker was pretty much everybody was agreeing was pretty much the player of the playoffs so far. And then yeah, just
big moments, you know. Like it's the big moments, and it's I mean,
Rafa felt vindicated after that. He's like, this is why I don't like this guy.
That's right.
I mean, I don't need to. I'll just look at the history. Like 2 years in a row, getting blown out by 40 in the game, game sevens in a complete. When Knicks fans, we will get to that. But when will they? Oh, I want Randall is not good enough in the playoffs. Let's go after this, and that player. Just look at their play record in the playoffs, and then why would you trade for them? But whatever, it was a positive season, mm-hmm. Very positive season, development all around, and the future looks bright in New York, which is a weird thing to say.
So you kind of look at it, and how is this season not a success? You saw, like, you go up and down. You saw playoff RJ come out, right? Like going into the game six, I believe he was averaging 23 points on 41% shooting from three in the Miami series, which is incredible. You had a resurgence in the regular season from Julius Randle, another all-NBA selection, another all-star selection, you know, so now you have in his 4 years here, two all-NBA selections and two all-star selections. That's a successful tenure, and that vindicates them when they signed him those years ago. You had Emmanuel Quickley kind of step up into, you know, a six-man role. You know, didn't really translate in the playoffs, but he really took a leap forward in terms of his ability and what he could do for this team. Obviously, you can't. We've been showering Brunson this whole time. You can't say enough about everything that he's done. And, you know, so you look at all that, and that's not to mention how Mitch has played better. Hartenstein has been a great signing. It's a home run. You know, it's... they've set a foundation with this new regime now, because I think really sometimes Knicks fans, and I'm going to toss it off to you, Raf, after this to talk about Knicks fans for a second. We forget how bad we were just a short 5 years ago. Like, understand, we were winning 17 games in a season, you know, not that long ago, hoping for the tank and everything and win the lottery. And the Sixers are kind of showing you right now, well, maybe that's not really the way, you know. And what we've done is our draft picks have just about all been excellent. You know, even guys you've taken in the second round, like Jericho Sims, have shown flashes that they're competent NBA players. So that is another thing to take away from this, is that the foundation's really good here. And I know a lot of people, like a lot of national people, and even a lot of Knicks fans, are kind of going in on this whole, oh, it's time, you know, it's time to blow up everything you have and acquire a star because, you know, you desperately need it. Like, they make it sound like, you know, we're this old aging team still trying to cling on to being good. The team's very young. You know, like, both Julius and Jalen are into their prime, you know, and, you know, it's still in their mid to late 20s. RJ's 22. Quick is 23, you know, and it's just like, these guys are still real young, you know, and they...
There's the window.
Building. Go ahead, Rafa.
There's the window. Like, the contracts with of the older players, they finish at a certain time when the contract of the young guys finish as well. So decisions can be made. So yeah. It's all a plan. It's
right. So I do want to toss it back over to you, Rafa, though, because as kind of the person who's been a little bit more on Twitter in the wake of all this than myself and Alex, I guess, like, what's your reaction to a lot of these fan comments, right? You know, a lot of people are disappointed and they want to kind of go nuclear, you know? And so what are your thoughts on that?
It's fucking ridiculous, basically. It's absolutely god-awful. It's because all you can see is people... They forgot for a chunk of time before we get the playoffs, when we were decent, when people understood we were going to into the playoffs, not the play-ins. People forgot about their narratives. That's it, the narratives. Like Alex called them, the vultures. They're circling around. I mean, you cannot feed your narrative that we weren't even a play-in team because X and Y player aren't good, but then bring that narrative when they lose in the second round. Because it's not the same thing to lose in the second round than not getting into the playoffs. Because so your narrative has to die, basically. Don't feed me the narrative about it. People get disappointed. I was disappointed in that loss. I was totally bummed the next day. It was the time when Alex says that, oh, we win, we go to sleep. But that sleep did not help. I slept through the night, but I was depressed the whole day, the day after, because I wanted to win, obviously. But I need to understand that there's plans and it's not narratives. You cannot say to me with a straight face or type with a straight face that, oh, let's trade Julius Randle, who is not a playoff performer, for Zach LaVine or Donovan Mitchell or Karl Anthony Towns. What have they done in the playoffs? Nothing. They lost in the playoffs. Worse than the Knicks did right now. How can people be complaining about, oh, this team won't go anywhere? Like you were saying, we don't have players in their mid-30s. You have players in their early 20s. Like, the oldest player is Julius Randle, who's 28, playing, or 29, or whatever. And 4 years ago, he was bouncing around from team to team. So you can be great or better than you are at 22 when you reach 25 or 26. It's not that hard to understand that. Like, I get into all these the fights because I'm bored and I go on Twitter and just get mad because it's ridiculous. How can you, the same logic you use to trash Julius Randle, is it because he's a regular season performer, he's not a playoff performer, so trade him. Hey, at least, and someone answers, at least RJ Barrett was a playoff performer. Oh, but he's not a regular season guy. Trade him. So there's no perfect, there's no way a player can satisfy your needs. Just he has to drop 35 during the regular season and 40 in the playoffs. That's the players you guys want. Because that player does not exist. I mean, 2K, NBA 2K, you can do that. That's not real life. And it's maddening. People, after the first, we won a playoff series since 2013. The first one. And people are calling for Tibbs' head. Like, why? This was a successful season. Okay, maybe your favorite player didn't play 30 minutes, but that's on him. Like, stop feeding your narratives. Stop trying to feed the narratives. I've been mad all week just looking at Twitter for this. It's ridiculous. It's so don't pointing like, oh, we lost because of this. I said in January of last year, you see, I was right. I was right 2 years ago. You bum, get out. Please delete the
bum.
Please get out. Please, it's ridiculous.
Let me interject
vultures, real quick. Vultures, Bravo. Vultures, vultures. Go ahead.
I really feel two things. First thing is, I said this on Knicks Fans Wilding this past week. I'm convinced Knicks fans don't watch the other series. Like, I'm convinced. Because if they did, they would see Jason Tatum struggling in the half of a game before finally turning it around. Like, can you imagine if one of our guys went 0 for 10 in the first half? Like, if Julius Randle went 0 for 10 in the first half. And then, you know, he finishes, like, 5 of 21 like Tatum did, you know. And Boston fans are like, okay, well, he turned it around in the second half. That's cool. You know, you've seen stinkers from Embiid. You've seen stinkers. Honestly, the only person you haven't really seen sinkers from is Jokic. You know, Jokic has been pretty magnificent the entire run. You know, you saw bad games from KD, you know, and that's Kevin fucking Durant. You know, it's just like, you need to understand that the other teams are good too.
Especially in the playoffs.
Watch these other games and understand, like, what we're working with here. You know, the playoffs are a totally different thing. And you're talking about the team and players who have not really been in this moment before. And, you know, it's just kind of like, and then you see, again, you mentioned, Rafa, like, you want your player to do well. So for a lot of people, it's like, who are, I'll use, like, I've mentioned Randall already. I'll use him as an example. If you kind of hitched your wagon to the fact that Obi should play more minutes and Randall is just a net negative on this team, then every time Randall makes a turnover, every time he has a bad defensive moment, every time he misses a jump shot, you're going to jump all over it and make it worse than it really is. And we said throughout the entire postseason that, hey, his process has been good. Shots haven't been falling. And so it's like, I sometimes feel like these people here, these fans that you see on Twitter especially, which aren't representative of every fan, but, you know, it's the vocal minority. They are going to be saying, you know, they're going to want heads to roll because they're just so desperate for a championship. But they want it to win on their terms. They don't want to win with the players they don't like doing well. And then, you know, after the game, you saw people like defacing like something outside of MSG with Julius's face on it saying, trade me. Like, this is how you treat, you know, your players who do well in the regular season, who guide you to a playoff series. And all three of us are in agreement. Jalen Brunson's the leader of this team. No one's trying to say anything otherwise. But to discount the fact that, you know, when DP was on, I kind of mentioned that Julius gets a little bit of the Ewing treatment, which is the kind of like, oh, can't win the big game, doesn't show up in the big game, but you're not in the big game without his contributions, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just kind of like, we do this to every single guy. We did it to Ewing. We did it to Marbury. We did it to Carmelo. We're doing it to Julius. We're doing it to RJ. Doing it a little bit to Brunson, you know. And, you know, it's just kind of like this fan base, I think, sometimes prides itself on being tough on players. I think there is such a thing as being too tough on players, you know, like where you're miserable watching your basketball team. Like, why are you a fan? But let me toss it to Alex, man. He's usually the voice of reason on this kind of stuff. So what you got for me?
Well, I was just remembering that quote from the Dark Knight about, you know, some men just like to watch the world burn. That's what it feels like to me. And it's just, some people are just never happy unless they're miserable. Do you know, like, I'm throwing them all out now to that. But I think with Randall, it's like you have to respect Randall for all that he's been through since he signed for the Knicks. Do you know, the ups, the downs. But he was the guy that kind of stood up and just.
Oh, you mean like when he got called out for kissing his wife, Alex?
Don't even start me on that, right?
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
But yeah, I mean, there's a guy that's, you know, right. If fans were turning around and just saying, look, Randall's had his ups and downs, but he's been there through the worst times, and we're coming out the other side. He's got us two. He's got two All-Star, he's got two All-NBA in those 4 years. Yes, he's had some downtime, he's had some terrible games, he's had some frustrating times, he's had effort levels or whatever. Do you know, but he's not the perfect player, he never was. He wasn't like some marquee signing that, you know, that we spent a fortune on. Do you know, it's like... Why can't we just say, if he was to go in the summer, why don't we just say thanks for the good times, and there have been lots of good times, and just let him go on his way? Why does it have to turn into some kind of personal, you know, like attack on him and, you know, trashing boards? I mean, those guys are just attention seeking arseholes. Do you know, like, that's all they are. They just want to make their videos, you know, jumping about in the street singing, you know, fuck Trae Young and, you know, and doing all sorts to Randall's picture. You know, that's they just live for being on the internet and getting their 10 seconds of fame. You know, those guys are just, you know, I can't have enough nasty words to say about them. Do you know, they're not proper fans if that's how they treat their players. Do you know, you have to respect these guys. And as I say, Randall, if Randall had four seasons like he had maybe in Knicks, not that ever kind of treating any player like that is okay, but you'd have something to say, like, this guy's just not good enough for the team, get him off the team. But he's not, he's had some brilliant times, he's had some great memories, he's won some amazing games. And as you said, Omar, this playoffs has not even been that bad, you know, like, from him. Yes,
no, he hasn't.
Then he'd actually have had a decent playoffs. So yeah, I'm so annoyed at just that instant reaction of, you know, that's the first thing you think about is just trashing a player, you know, and looking for somebody to blame. Whereas, as I say, it has been such an excellent season. But I often say to these guys, I was like, what end to a season would have actually made you sit back and talk like we are talking now? Do you know, other than winning the whole thing, you know, they would have found some kind of turn it around in some kind of way, you know, whether it got to the conference finals, the finals and lost, they would have still been angry. You know, is there any situation that you would have been happy to kind of go out and just say, right, this has been a good season, let's, you know, enjoy the summer and see what it brings? But
yeah, I mean, like, understand who you are, right, as a franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not the Warriors, you know, we haven't had this amazing string of success. Like the Warriors, same scenario as us, losing six in the second round, but Warriors are coming off a championship. So if their fans are disappointed, it's a little bit of a different situation than a team that, you know, wasn't projected to do anything and, you know, does that. So you got to measure it with different lenses, of course. I want to jump into the off season.
Even just before you guys finish it, we're talking about a guy, Julius Randle, the talk shifted to him. Averaged 17.1, 9.4, and 3.7 assists. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are bad numbers. All of a sudden, averaging almost a double double are bad numbers. Are we kidding? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, but you're somebody playing... comparing that to the regular season, and it's just like the playoffs are harder. What don't you get about
exactly?
You do that with MB,
exactly.
Right? You do that with all these guys.
No, there's no disrespect, but during the regular season, you're playing the Detroit Pistons for tanking. You're playing the Spurs. You're playing whatever. I mean, it's the playoffs. teams actually try it out hard, try harder.
And
Jimmy Butler is a no-show. Exactly. I mean, player, you can adapt to the offense, to the defenses, but the defenses adapt to you as well. Like, it's hard to be better in the playoffs unless you sucked during the regular season. Cases of like RJ Barrett, who's a guy averaging 20 points and he's called a bust, averaging 20 in this league. I mean, people look at highlights from other teams. Look at highlights. Mm-hmm. And they see Ja Morant posting or almost posting this guy and Garland doing this, that game. Like, it was that game. I mean, I don't know if you saw this. I think it was last week. There were a bunch of highlights from Ron Baker. Oh, this guy's really good. Look at these moves. And then you look at the score. We were down 30 and 40. Like, he sucked, but the highlights make them look amazing.
Right.
I mean, it's if people bring every little thing they can to feed their narratives, and that just, I mean, pisses me off because please make it at least make sense. Just don't try and use what you want to use to make yourself valuable. Oh, look at this. Julius Randle missed 3 shots in a row. He sucks. Bench him. He hit the first 10. That doesn't matter. Okay, good. Like, please.
This is why I'm always going on about like post-game stuff, Rafa. And, you know, you can't think sensibly. You can't think logically when you're in that, still in that high emotional state, you know. And it's just, that's why I just can't be bothered listening to this stuff, because it's, yeah, I'd much rather just kind of calm myself down and, you know, listen to some kind of reasoned analysis a couple of days later.
This can be controversial, but if you want to do that post game and you're asking people for money, be better. Do a better job. If you want to be a passionate fan, be a passionate fan. Okay, but don't say you're something else. Don't go on then doubling down or ignoring the things you said on the post games. Like, don't ignore them. If you're asking people money, be better. If we were asking people money to do this podcast, we would be a lot more professional in many other ways. Right. It's not like, I mean, not saying we're non-professional, but it's different. If you're asking people money and everything, be better at what you do. Don't feed the narratives just to bring in the more super chats or whatever.
Yeah, so, but once the money starts rolling in, Rafa, then the whole tactics change.
You know what it is. Let's leave it at that. Let's leave it at that, guys. Let's go into a little bit about the offseason here. Okay, so the Knicks have an interesting summer ahead of them, guys. So the way I look at it, there's 3 courses of action that the Knicks could take. Action 1 is just run it back with the same group. You know, assume that you've had, you know, a decent amount of growth, and, you know, these guys are still young, they're going to get even better. That's option 1. Option 2 is to continue building around your main 3 guys, RJ, Jalen, and Julius, and, you know, add a couple key free agent pieces. Now, option 3 is to go all in on trading for a star. So, I guess before we get into any free agency or any trade stuff, what option do you guys think the team should take?
I think the first thing is just not to panic. And, you know, this front office has been really successful in doing that so far. There's been plenty of opportunities where they could have just thrown everything at certain players, and they've not. And as I've already mentioned, you know, that summer where they started like extending Noel and Forney and things, then, you know, yeah, you could say that there was a lot of errors there, but, you know, I think they did the right thing in the moment. I didn't think they were thinking we're not ready, or they were thinking we're not ready to push all the chips in for a big star at that moment. let's reward the guys that got us to this point, and you know, keep it going for a few years while the young guys develop, and then we're ready to push the chips in once the veterans' kind of contracts are up. So I don't see a huge amount wrong with that. Obviously, the Kemba experiment was a disaster, but we've talked so many times about how we were all like celebrating in the streets that night when we heard that he was signing. So we all got that one wrong. So I'm not blaming the front office too much about that. And clearly we needed a point guard at the time. They gave us the best one that we could have got on the face of it. So I think as well, just the fit with Tibbs' system, the fit with Randall was a disaster as well. So yeah, we had to reset a little bit, but we hadn't kind of overspent, I don't think. A lot of those contracts were movable, which we did. And I think we're still in a really good place. I don't think we've still got some good assets. We'll see what happens tomorrow night with the Mavs pick. But even if it doesn't convey, then, you know, it should hopefully convey the following year. So I think we're still in a good place, and I really trust this front office to not just panic and go all in for anybody. And I don't think, you know, just looking at the free agents available, you know, a lot of people were saying this is a bad free agent class, but I think when you're moving around the margins and just trying to make incremental improvements, there's a lot of players out there. There might not be that kind of marquee star, but those stars don't. I think it was last year we talked about this, that free agency for elite signings, it just doesn't really happen anymore. So, you know, you're going to have to trade for those guys. There's plenty of talent there on the free agent market for wanting to move, like Fournier, Rose's contract, and a few others around the edges. So I think there's plenty of good shooting out there. I'd say I trust this for kind of make no improvements, I think, this year, and just run it back with the guys we've got. I don't think there's a trade out there for Randall. I don't think anybody's really untouchable on the roster apart from Brunson, but I just don't see a trade for Randall that's out there right now that makes much sense.
Calmer now. I think we should just build on what we have, continue to build on what we have. It's there's no need for us to panic. And like, Brunson is tied up. We just brought him. It was his first season here. And we signed RJ long term. We're quickly, and Obi and everyone else wants to stay here. I think there's no one show they want to leave or they're unhappy. And it's good to build the foundation of solid players and maintain them here. I feel like Josh Hart, for example, just molded perfectly, or fitted perfectly into this team, this roster. I don't know. My only concern moving forward is, will Tibbs maintain the shortened rotation, or will we try to acquire the pieces to be able to widen that rotation? You know, because you've been trying it out for an entire season, RJ with the second unit, and with quickly and everything. So I don't know if there's even a chance that we can change, go away from that 9-man rotation we had. We used this season that worked to perfection, especially after the disaster of Evan Fournier again. So that's my only concern. Obviously, I think we need shooting. If we can improve without giving up the bag for someone, because I don't know what player is going to demand a trade.
There's always somebody who you don't really see it coming, and you know they kind of want out.
Someone to from say Chicago? Right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking, LaVine DeRozan, probably Tobias Harris is in the mix there with Philly, depending on what happens. Embiid, could be in the mix. I'm not saying we're going after Joel Embiid. I'm just saying, you know, in terms of like situations to monitor kind of thing.
What about I was going to mention, what about Andrew Wiggins?
Just Wiggins is another one.
Yeah. The cap situation in Golden State.
And you would imagine they'd stay loyal to Clay and prioritize Clay over Wiggins.
Kind of give him a legacy contract. So
Yeah.
Trade I saw was forced to put him up. Was we getting Tobias Harris and giving Julius Randle. I don't know what would that do to us? I mean
so I can give you the devil's advocate of that, Rafa. What that does for you it gives you a reliable shooter in your starting lineup that's going to be spaced out. So that way you give RJ and Brunson more room to operate inside. If you make that trade, and Tobias is an expiring, so it's like it's a pretty big contract. It's like 40 some million or something, but it's an expiring deal. So it's not a huge deal, you know, in that aspect, not a huge commitment. You're going to be banking on the fact that RJ is now your number two, right? And so if you do that trade, you say, hey, we saw something from RJ Barrett in this playoffs that he's ready to take that next leap. He's going to be the guy or the secondary guy on this team moving forward. And, you know, can't coexist with Randle in that role. So let's send out Randle, bring in a reliable shooter like a Tobias Harris, and be able to kind of space the floor to let him operate with Brunson in the paint, right? So that, to me, is your thought process if you want to execute that trade. But to your point, yeah, well, like, we don't know what the trade market's going to look like, right?
Would you do that trade, Randle for Tobias?
Well, you'd have to add in Fournier, I'm assuming, to make that work money-wise, depending on Philly's cap situation, which I don't know about. But, I mean, I wouldn't like it personally because I believe in Randle. But if that's your thinking, I could understand the thinking, you know. And Tobias is a good shooter. You know, the problem is like sometimes he gets asked to do too much. When he was in Detroit, he was asked to do too much. In Philly, he's kind of in a weird spot, especially as Maxey has kind of emerged, right, as like a legit scoring option. So he's even like the fourth option there now, which is kind of crazy after Harden and Embiid and Maxey. So I think he needs somewhere else to go. I'm just not sure if it's here, you know. And I'm curious to see if Philly decides to do that, what is their asking price for Tobias? You know, just throwing away any of the Randle stuff, just in general, like what do they want for Tobias Harris, right? I guess for me, guys, it's all about tinkering and tweaking. I think it mirrors what you guys say. We absolutely need shooting. Like, I see Cam Johnson as a restricted free agent. That entices me a lot over there in Brooklyn. I'm assuming Brooklyn will probably match, but even so, a guy like, you know, Harrison Barnes is coming up on free agency and, you know, he's getting a little older, you know, but as a guy, you know, kind of anchoring a bench unit with Josh Hart, you know, it's hard to, I could kind of see that, you know, you need somebody who could shoot at a decent clip, like 35% and up consistently on decent attempts. That's what we were missing in the playoffs. And it's what we missed a lot during the regular season. The thing is, it's like, to your point, Alex, you don't want to overreact here and take away the good that this team, this unit did. I mean, you look at like these regular season stats, they're third in the league in offensive rating, you know, middle of the pack in defensive rating, but you know, their offensive rebounding has been good. Their turnover percentage has been good, was good this year. They did a lot of good things. You know, they're the seventh winningest team in the league. Like, consider that for a second. If you know, that's a pretty big deal, man. You know, you can't just discount that. And I know people kind of are ready to go all in and trade everything for Cat or Embiid or whoever the case may be. But to me, it's like, let's not overreact. You know, we're working with a pretty interesting timeline here and a pretty interesting set of players that are pretty good. And I think you add a shooter who can defend a little bit. That's why Fournier doesn't see the floor, right? It's why I think somebody like a Harrison Barnes or an Andrew Wiggins, to your point, to your guys' point, makes sense because they can defend a little bit, right? And they can shoot as well. So I think that's kind of, that should be the main goal this year, this offseason, is adding some shooters that can play like 20 to 30 minutes.
Gary Trent Jr. was another one.
Yeah, he's going to want to start, though, Alex, I think. Yeah, you know, That's why I didn't mention him. I thought about him as well. He's an excellent shooter. But I think his whole thing is he wants to be a starter. And I think he's going to – he's probably one of those guys. You know, every year you have a few guys who are just going to be like, who's paying me the most? That's who I'm going to sign with. You know, so he's probably a guy who would, like, sign with, like, a Houston or something if they just threw a bunch of money at him. That's my read.
Jeremy Grant's another one like that, yeah. I think.
That's kind of like if you want to move on from Randall, that's like Randall Light, right? You know, that's kind of like same type of player.
There's actually somebody, if you want to move on from Randall, somebody else in Washington that could possibly be
Kuzma.
No,
Beal? Porzingis. God, no, thank you, dude. So I guess let's just kind of shift into the free agency stuff. I mean, give me a name. Who do you guys want the team to go after?
Well, I think it's more like what kind of position are we looking at here? If we're rolling it back, is it really a shooting guard? Are we giving up in Grimes as a starter?
I mean, our bench was the one
wing.
Lacking.
It has to be a backup wing, right? Like,
yeah. And look at against the Heat, they zoned the second unit. There's nothing they could do. So we need shooting, and we need shooting in that second unit. That's why Obi was shooting so much. Like, we needed that. So we hoped we would get that from Hartenstein, but he didn't shoot a three this year, which was surprising. I think he would do that more. I would say it doesn't need to be a starter. I think Grimes fits in good with that starting unit. Josh Hart does too, but I like Grimes there. And like I mentioned, I like the energy that Josh Hart brings into the bench unit as well. Helps out and kind of motivates in some point, motivates RJ to be a little bit more energetic as well in the game. So I like him from the bench, but I don't know.
Do you know who I've always really liked? And it's not just his recent form, is Lonnie Walker. He's unrestricted.
Yeah. Lakers got to try to bring him back, I would imagine, right? After his game four performance against Golden State.
You would think so, yeah.
I just come back to the fact, like, we need a guy who could come off the bench and hit some threes. You know, that's it'll give you like 20 plus minutes a night. That's what you need, you know. And if it's Seth Curry, cool. You know, he's a free agent this year as well. I think like starters, if you're really locked in on this core, your starters are going to stay the same. You know, Grimes has proven himself, hasn't really given you a reason to believe that he is going to be relegated to the bench. You know, in some senses, a lot of people are getting on Tibbs for not having him in the starting lineup to start this Miami series because, you know, the bench was just so decimated after that, and plus the IQ injury. And if the idea is, hey, IQ is going to run point off the bench, you're going to have Hart, and you're going to have Hartenstein out there, assuming that this is a 9-man rotation. You get a guy like a Lonnie Walker, you know, like even a Harrison Barnes or whoever you want to get to come off the bench and give you 20, 25 minutes a game. That is going to be what the doctor ordered, I think. It doesn't have to be like, oh, we're going to do this and shuffle up the whole starting lineup, especially in Thibodeau's system. You know, there's always it's a little bit more restrictive in the sense you're going to always want rim protection, right? So you're not going to have a lineup that doesn't have Mitch or Hartenstein on there unless it's like foul trouble or somebody got ejected or, you know, some extreme scenario.
About Max?
One more low cost option.
It's not a bad idea. He can shoot.
Yeah. Max Strus.
All right. Well, I've got even better.
I would have nightmares.
Someone who used to be a point guard not so long ago is also unrestricted. Alec Burks.
Again, not a bad idea if you're having quickly running the backup point. Because we
Terrence
all agreed.
Ross.
He kind of shit the bed in Phoenix, though, Rafa. I'm kind of out on Terrence Ross myself. Caris LeVert's available. You know, Malik Beasley would be available. I mean, there's guys here. You know, Kelly Oubre is available. You know, so there's a lot of guys that you could slot in to get, like, again, that 20 minutes a game wing off the bench. And I think that's the way they should go. But it's like the last segment of this show. I kind of want to get wacky. Let's talk about trades.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of like potential trades that have been kind of bandied about. We mentioned Tobias. We mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns before. Wiggins. If you guys looked around and wanted to go big fish hunting, big game hunting, I mean, who would you be looking at right now if you were Leon Rose?
I know it's,
or do you sit out this year and just say, I'm going to wait for the inevitable Giannis or Luka request out?
You know? Yeah, I think that's the obvious option. I mean, unless it, you know, I know he's not Rafa's favorite, but especially after his Game 7 performances, but I still love Booker's game, and just watching that guy shoot, just having that kind of option, that shooting option, just automatic. You know, I was watching him and Durant play the other night, and every single shot both of them were putting up, you're just like, that's in, even just as it leaves the hands. And just to have that option, having that offensive pressure on the defense, that they know that's, you know, they've got to double up on him because, you know, the shooting's that good, you know. Having that in the team, I can't remember the last time I felt that confident about, maybe kind of when Melo was in his kind of prime, you know, where you're just like, everything just seemed automatic, you know, and just having that kind of pure shooter in the team, I'd love to have that. But I know there's always been a connection there with Leon Rose. And as I said, the only way it would ever happen, I guess, is if it all went completely to pot in Phoenix, but which isn't a possibility, you know, with the new owner and everything. But yeah, it would have to go seriously, seriously wrong. Durant would have to leave first, I would think. Chris Paul's already out the door. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that things just go completely wrong in Phoenix. But yeah, Booker would be an ideal one for me, just from a pure shooting.
All right, Rafa, what you got
across the roster there?
I was afraid he would go to Alex. He would go to Washington and request a Porzingis trade. So I'm less concerned. I am less concerned.
Yeah,
trades. I don't know. It's can maybe Jokic wins in Denver and gets let me win in New York. I don't know. It's
oh man. Imagine getting a guy like that.
In dreams.
Right.
I mean, the guys that you can talk about are, well, there's Damian Lillard, who's whatever is happening in with the Blazers. It's whatever there. Mm-hmm. No one knows what they're doing. No one knows what he's doing, by the way. There's Embiid. There's, who is there? Trae Young was getting mad at the Hawks and leaving. I don't. It's weird. Would you imagine? Would you get instead of trading him and you talked about Klay Thompson, him staying and Wiggins leaving? Imagine a guy like Klay Thompson saying, "Okay, I understand this," or they understand that he wants to leave and try somewhere else and plays with the Knicks. Just the shooting, he's a good shooter. Just instead of him running around, just have the shooting there. I don't know. It's even a possibility. I don't. It's weird. It's always rough to do something like this because things can change so quickly. Like I mentioned, Denver and beginning of the season, there was a possibility that Jamal Murray would leave because he and Jokic play blah blah blah. Now they're super cool. Imagine they lose and Jamal Murray wants to leave. But is he the guy we want to pursue? Another guard or a point guard? Because now that we have Jalen Brunson, there are not a lot of wings available. OG Anunoby, why? Basically, it's a. It's
tough. Scott Siakam.
Yeah.
I mean, any of these moves, like Siakam and OJ or whatever, there feels like sideways moves. Sideways. Mm-hmm. You're not improving. It's not, you're getting Pascal Siakam for Julius Randle, power forward. It's, are you that better? Are you even better without Julius Randle and adding Pascal Siakam? They're different players. Are you better getting OG instead of RJ or whatever? Is it? I mean, it's, you're in the same area.
Sideways moves can be okay if you're thinking about, you know, a change in style, maybe a change in coach, and that you know, that new coach coming in, say Johnny Bryant takes over in the summer and just says, you know, I want to play this way. Julius Randle doesn't fit. Pascal Siakam's my guy, you know, and then yes, sideways moves can make a lot of sense.
I just don't think that we're in that position right now. Like change. I don't think Tibbs is leaving. It's only if he wants to leave for some reason. I don't know if he wants to.
He just wants to like transition to the front office or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, let me just leave when I'm at the high and leave things good for the next guy. If it is Johnny Bryant, I don't think it happens. But
yeah,
could be something done. So I don't know if it's.
These there would be a huge surprise if he did. I think these things that happen, you tend to get a kind of a feeling for them about to happen before they do. And the way Tibbs talks, you know, it doesn't seem like he's kind of, you know, doesn't care anymore. He still seems to have that fire in him. So
he's a basketball lifer, man. He's gonna be trying to stay on the sideline as long as he can, I think.
Yeah. I think you might be right. I think he's just one of those guys. He just kind of loves and breathes basketball. Yeah. So I don't think he could
be
office man.
That's kind of, he just, like you said, like I would see him getting into like scouting or something before he would go into just like a GM advisor type role or whatever, yeah. Just because like he's like a basketball grinder guy, you know, he doesn't really have a life outside of the game. You know, you read all the stuff about him and this is his entire life, you know, which makes him a good coach, but also, you know, doesn't really, you know, allow him much, you know, leverage to kind of go upwards unless he just wants to retire, you know, which I don't think he's there yet. For me, I'm just going to keep on pushing my agenda. Jaylen Brown is the one for me that you go after. I don't care what anybody says in Boston. You know, he does not want to be there. Like, it is so obvious to me that he's just like, I don't know if he's kind of like jealous of Jason Tatum, you know, or the fact that they've kind of rumored him into a bunch of trades and it's kind of rubbed him the wrong way. It's going to be tough because he made All-NBA, so he's going to be eligible for some sort of Supermax type contract. But I think if he doesn't want to stick around in Boston, he has one more year left on his deal. You try and get that guy because he's you want to talk about a guy that would fit in perfectly. You know, I feel like he has the defense there. He has, you know, he has enough of an outside shot. He's not super proficient from three. I think he's like 34-35%, but he has an outside shot of a threat, and you would never really question his effort defensively, you know, which is what, you know, the big knock on Julius is, right? So that to me is the one. I mean, a lot of people talk about Embiid. Embiid scares me because, one, what you're going to have to give up to get him. Two, the injuries are starting to mount up, man. He's reminding me a lot of Patrick Ewing, you know, as the years have gone on. You know, the knee injuries, wrist injury, this injury, that injury is just kind of, every time he falls down, which he does on purpose, you kind of, you know, gasping a little bit, hoping that he's going to be okay. But yeah, it just feels like that's been a recurring issue, which is the case when you have 7-footers, right? Like we've talked about before, guys are that tall. He's like Embiid 7'3", if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you're kind of like, you're left wondering how long is he going to last? You know, Dame, I think that moment has sailed. I think if that was going to happen, it should have happened 2 years ago. You mentioned Trae Young, Rafa. Atlanta has an interesting summer ahead of themselves. You know, I wouldn't put it past them to try and shop Trae, but the fact that he kind of showed some things in those last few games in their series against Boston, I think probably buys him another year. But yeah, there's names out there, you know, of players. And you know, we talked about Wiggins earlier, and not that he's like a superstar or anything like that, but he's a really good player. You know, that the Knicks could explore. But I personally think they kind of they waited out. I truly believe that they're kind of waiting to see if RJ has that next level in him. And we kind of started to see it here in the playoffs a little bit. And I wonder if he really just goes crazy next year to start, which is, as we know, uncharacteristic of RJ. He's always starting season slow. But if he really takes another step, then you kind of say, hey, we got our guy here, right? And you really look at that draft now. It's like with Ja's most recent, you know, Instagram gun stuff and Zion's inability to stay healthy. It looks like we dodged a bullet and we're able to get RJ, who's, you know, been a model citizen and consistently gets better every single year.
Dodged a bullet was a bit of an unfortunate phrase there.
Yeah. Hey, he was holding the gun. He wasn't shooting it, Alex. So, right, you know, right. It's only somewhat unfortunate, you know. Still unfortunate, yeah. But not fully unfortunate.
Just with RJ quickly, yeah. I mean, he's admitted himself that, you know, last summer when we're talking about the contract, you know, he pretty much didn't do any kind of work in the gym. So, you know, so coming off the playoffs that he's just had, you know, I can imagine him just going all summer pretty much getting himself in real shape. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him finally have, you know, hit the ground running in, at the start of the season. So it'll be an interesting summer for him.
Raf, any final thoughts?
Sure. Well, I don't know. It's it can be a very interesting offseason, depending on what we want to do. So many coaches changing places as well. It's interesting how players will try and move around to with the coaches as well. And well, what happens in Philly and what in with the Suns, and where does Chris Paul end up? So that can change a lot as well. Let's see. I don't know.
You guys are prepared for the DeAndre Ayton rumors.
Oh my God! I mean, he's it's deserved. I mean, they maintained him for a reason in the trades that they made. So it shows. The Nets knew who was their target, and I hope we don't make a crazy move, a crazy trade, just for the sake of it. I don't think this front office is like this. They proved themselves to be, and people laugh about it. They don't make the moves quick enough. They don't do anything. Well, but let's keep developing. Let's hope all of our young guys keep coming stronger next year. We mentioned this a lot. It's the Obi situation, which is...
Yeah, Obi and Quick, both of them, yeah.
Difficult, weird situation for him still with the Knicks. I don't know if...
I wouldn't be surprised if he was part of a sign-and-trade, Rafa. Like, if
it's, you know, a guy
that you want to get in here as a veteran who could probably slide in better as that stretch for backup to Randall. Because I do think, like, if you're going to keep Randall around a while, you want to probably maybe try to limit those minutes a little bit even more, you know, just kind of get him closer to 32. And, and you know, that way you don't have like a young guy in Obi who's trying desperately to get minutes. So you get a veteran maybe that Tibbs might trust a little bit more in certain situations, especially defensively. And then just kind of roll with it that way. But, you know, it's an interesting summer ahead of us, guys. You know, it's going to be every summer is an interesting summer in the NBA, especially in Knicks land, you know, where things are always in motion, right? But that's going to wrap us up for an episode here. I want to thank everybody who's tuned in this season. Thank everybody who jumped on as a guest with us most recently, DP, Doug earlier in the year as well. So I think Brutus earlier in the year. I might be forgetting a couple people, but you know, all of the people who have kind of interacted with us on Twitter, thank you for being a part of this. If you like the podcast, of course, follow us on Twitter at WWKnicksPodcast. Make sure to subscribe and put on notifications on YouTube. And make sure to subscribe and give us a rating and review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. On behalf of Alex and Rafa, this is Omar, Worldwide Knicks, and we will see you guys soon.